This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
It's 9:07. You're listening to WSMI AM 1540. It's the Wednesday Talk Show. I'm your host, Tobin Ott, alongside everybody's favorite uncle, Uncle Ralph Niehaus. Uncle Ralph, how are
you today?
Greetings.
Happy opening day to you.
Pardon me?
Happy opening day to you.
Yeah.
One game series against the Marlins, but hey, that's all right.
But baseball showed how intelligent they do things, and they went to Japan to open the season.
Yeah, they've done that for the past couple years
now.
Yeah,
I know.
So I think Ichiro has something to do about that, you know.
You think?
You got to keep those fans happy. So we have a good guest here today.
Yes, we do.
Joe Gasparich from the Montgomery County Hazmat Team and, county board and, Nokomis Fire Chief. Anything else?
I'm kind of the assistant EMA director for the county as well, so.
Is there any other titles you need?
No, that'll be fine. Thanks.
Okay. We're here to talk about, and ironically enough, this is perfect timing that we have you here. Texas last night got just pounded with tornadoes and heavy thunderstorms. We're going to talk about severe weather preparedness as April is Severe Weather Awareness Month and all that good stuff. We're going to have that conversation right after this.
At Plummer Funeral Home, after many years of service, we remain committed to providing the most caring, professional funeral services in this area. It is our mission to provide each family with the very best in quality care during what is often the most difficult of circumstances. At Plummer Funeral Home, we have never taken for granted the confidence families place in us, and we promise to always go the extra mile to earn your trust. Plummer Funeral Home, the locally owned hometown funeral home, your neighbor and your friend.
And we're back on the Wednesday Talk Show. Tobin Ott alongside everybody's favorite uncle. Our guest this week is Joe Gasparich from the Montgomery County Hazmat Team and the Montgomery County Board. And anything else you want to throw at him, he'll take that title as well.
Sure.
except Mr. Nokomis. You're not that yet.
Well, sleep's overrated, so you might as well work.
I'm kind of the same way. So how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing really great. It's nice to be here.
And we're here to talk about the severe weather preparedness and all that good stuff. And let's start off the hazmat team. How are things going with the hazmat team?
Pretty well. I think we're probably going to end up in a situation where we're going to lose a little funding in the next couple of years, as most state agencies are. The money comes through the mutual aid box alarm system, which is MABUS, and we're probably going to end up having to spend a little more money to get our equipment serviced and maintained, but I think everybody's going to kind of have to go through that these days. However, we're getting some new equipment, and we actually have been able to train a lot this last year and get used to some of the new equipment, some of the stuff that they've given us. We now have a collection of monitors that we can place out around an area and actually monitor for gases and contaminants. That was something we got last year to the tune of about $65,000. So I think grand total of all the equipment we have in the county now is probably up around $700,000. So.
And one thing with the hazmat team, you have been called out since its inception several times, whether it's been the one I remember was a gas spill out on the interstate. There was a truck that, overturned or jackknifed and fuel went over the it's not an organization that's not been utilized.
No.
It has been utilized.
It has been, and we've had a couple calls in the last couple months that has not brought the whole team out, but we had a pretty good-sized gas spill at the rest stop in along the interstate. Mm-hmm. Some people were up there for that, and then we had a call not long after that of a leaking rail car down in the southern part of the county, and we had some folks go down for that. So the team doesn't always deploy, but we do send people out for those.
And just in our local communities, Joe, we live in communities where infrastructure, gas lines and things of that nature, which could cause problems and do cause problems because of the nature of the age of them. Most of our communities, Hillsborough, Nokomis, that doesn't matter. Gas lines and things of this nature have been there for years and years and years, and there's always a chance of problems, and of course this is area.
And years ago, I mean, a lot of people remember the fact that this very facility was evacuated one night when there was a natural gas line that was ruptured not too far from here.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is we're in farming season now, so there's a lot of anhydrous out there on the roads. And you never know when you could have a problem with that, and that's not something you want to take lightly either.
So. Yeah, and that brings up another problem, too, when you're dealing with anhydrous, and that's a Ranger Rick problem. That's meth.
Exactly, and they kind of handle that side of it. And I haven't talked to them lately, but my guess would be that a lot of that problem, I won't say that they're not dealing with it, but I think they're not dealing with it as much as they were for a while. But still, if the situation gets worse, you know, we could very easily have to go out there and help mitigate that situation as well.
Well, we laughed when that, didn't laugh, but commented when that, when we had that gas leak. I said, yeah, this is one of the few times I went through Walshville to get to Litchfield.
Exactly, yeah, and it was it filled the whole bottom up down here and actually was there for a long period of time. The atmospheric conditions that night were pretty much right for that stuff to hang around for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hope we don't have anything like that again, but it's like you said, I mean, Montgomery County is a lot more of an industrialized county, I think, than people think it is. There's a lot of manufacturing that goes on. We got a lot of chemicals that are in different places where they're used and stored. So you never know. I mean, we have to be prepared.
Where we live, north of Hillsboro, you know, we have some pretty large gas lines that angle across within a half a mile of us. So
sure.
you always have to have in the back of your mind, what do I do if a situation comes up?
An evacuation is not an easy thing, especially if it's in a large city or someone. And I say large, but, you know, anytime you have to evacuate people in any kind of a urban area, you have a real problem. We've been lucky. We haven't had to do that, but we could very well be in a situation where we could be handling that situation too.
So. And the last thing people want to do is leave their home.
And they don't want to take. They don't want to leave. They want to take the pets with them. They want to pack as many belongings as they can. And people don't understand the concept. When it's time to get out, you got to get out. That's all there is to it.
And I've always said I've been in Montgomery County for 6 years that there's nothing ever small that happens in this county.
No,
it's always,
certainly isn't. No, that's
if
true.
If we do something, it's all in. All out.
Well,
I mean,
the people like to do things right around here.
No, which, I mean, you had a fire in Nokomis that took out one building. I mean,
yep.
It's just it's nothing small. It's always major.
Which brings to light, Joe, another thing. Tobin just said he's been here 6 years. His visa's up, and it's time for us to renew it.
Well,
so there's a big decision coming up right
and
there.
I think probably that'll be something we have to address on a county board, and we'll do that next time he's there doing the story.
Yeah. Now, come on now. Come on. we're in April right now, and as we mentioned before when we started the program, last night Texas got inundated with tornadoes. My estimation is, and I've said this, that we got by winter, but I think we're going to pay the tab during this year. How dangerous of a time, weather-related, is this?
A lot of changes in the atmosphere. Probably not as much this year as there have been in years past because it was a lot warmer, a lot quicker. A lot of times what you see in March and April is you have a lot of different changes where you have weather patterns coming through, and you could easily see a 30, 40, 50-degree change during the day. We haven't had a lot of that, but what we've seen, I think, is some of the fronts have lined up. For example, the Harrisburg tornado that went through, that was a pretty strong line that went through there, and you saw a pretty severe storm down there. F4 is certainly nothing to sneeze at, and those folks were pretty devastated down in that area. You know, we got another month, maybe month and a half of it, where, you know, with the changing atmospheric conditions, we could see severe weather in the area.
And it looks like it's almost ripe. I'm not predicting it. I'm not saying that we deserve it. It just looks like it's about right.
You know, and the good thing about it is that we work a lot more closely with the National Weather Service than we ever have before. It's nothing to call those folks down in St. Charles and talk to them, and they'll give you information on what you need to know. And they're a lot better at I think they're better at predicting severe weather than they ever were at winter weather. But they can pretty much, you know, nail it down to an hour, you know, and get warnings out 15, 20 minutes ahead of time now. So,
in your job in this category, have you had the opportunity to be in the Harrisburg area since that hit?
I wasn't down there, but some of the people that I know real well were down there and were talking about what they had down there. And they had a lot of, it was widespread damage. And, you know, tornadoes can be devastating in that lives are lost and property is damaged. But what people don't realize is the biggest dollar expenditure on tornadoes and storms is actually debris removal. I mean, they make a mess of things. And people spend months cleaning up the debris, and then they have to figure out how they're going to get the debris segregated. And some you burn, some you landfill, and So it really, there's, when the emergency part of it's done, which usually, you know, a day later, whatever, you've got your search and rescue done, then you start having to do the cleanup, and people want to get back in their homes and get personal possessions, and it's a lot of work.
And I guess one thing we need to learn about the Harrisburg situation is, don't think that, oh, my house got destroyed, we got FEMA, everything's going to be taken care of, because that's not a guarantee anymore.
No, that's not. And they had, I think down in Harrisburg, I guess you could say, you have to look at it two ways. One is that people were fortunate there was a lot of personal insurance down there that will pick up a lot of the costs. And so I guess the amount of uninsured loss they had down there didn't really push the declaration process far enough along that FEMA actually came in and helped them out. They said there was a lot of insured loss. So I think you have to look at it both ways. That's a good thing. But when you go to look for federal disaster reimbursement, mm-hmm. that doesn't play well when you're trying to get the numbers.
Is that what made it different between Harrisburg and Joplin? Joplin didn't have that, and they were able to get that really quick?
Not sure. I know the Joplin area is pretty well developed, too, and I'm not mm-hmm. exactly sure what actually did not get Harrisburg through. But my suspicion is there has to be a set dollar amount per capita mm-hmm. that FEMA looks at. If you exceed that amount, then you're eligible for individual assistance. There's two kinds of assistance they give. One is individual assistance, that's for homeowners, and one is public assistance, that's for people that actually go out and do the debris removal and the public entities. I think they got that. I think I heard that on the radio yesterday.
Thanks for listening.
It's going to have public assistance, but I don't think the individual assistance went through. And you're seeing a situation here, too, where if you had a state senator step up to the plate maybe 10 years ago, I think it was pretty much a done deal that you were going to go ahead and get the FEMA assistance. Well, that didn't work this last time, so I think you're starting to see people saying we're in a situation now where we got to be a lot more dollar conscious. I think Harrisburg is what we're going to see in the future. I think there's going to be less individual assistance because the federal government just doesn't have the money to do it.
And I think that's a case where that shows how dire of a situation we are, not only on a state level, but in the country level, where they can't even provide assistance. You got to watch the area.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of money in disaster funds these days. It's pretty much something they appropriate when they come back into legislative session.
And this is a funnel down, trickle down, whatever you want to call it, situation, Joe, because, you know, on the local level, our local towns, they're financially strapped to just exist, mm-hmm. let alone deal with a disaster like a tornado that just would come through and destroy 75% of the area. So it's trickle down. The government doesn't have the money. The local authorities doesn't have the money. Nobody has the money to take care of these tragedies. Mm-hmm. It's just we're in a situation where it just isn't there.
Go ahead.
Elected folks go out and they have compassion for the people that they're dealing with, and I understand that. But sometimes, you know, you make the assumption that we're going to be able to get you some assistance and really get this straightened out and get you back going the way you were, and you're seeing more and more in this country where that money is not flowing as freely as it was before.
And that shows the dire situation where, depending on whoever is in the state or in the federal side of things, no one has the answer.
And the other thing about the federal assistance is it was never designed to be something where you made money. It was designed to get you back on your feet again, and that's it. So it's not like when you go get federal disaster assistance that you're going to get all the money back for all the loss. You're going to get back on your feet again, but that's about all you're going to get.
And, of course, when we look at what hit Dallas-Fort Worth area last night or what hit Harrisburg a few short weeks ago, for you or I or Tobin or anyone to rebuild our house, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to the intangibles that blow away or destroyed, like your family heirlooms or whatever, you can never get them back. So, you know, they're just gone. All that stuff is gone. And it's an intangible. You, there's just no way you can get it back.
You know, I saw a story on the news the other day where there's a Facebook page that they put together after the Harrisburg tornado where people who found pictures could scan them and upload them and put them on the page, and then people who lost these could go check and see if they were under. I thought that was a pretty good use of social media.
I'll bring that up. You mentioned Facebook and that. Social media like that, has that helped the game out to bring awareness out that say, hey, we've got severe weather coming this way, take precaution? Has that helped?
I was filling in for the EMA director in January when we had the situation in Litchfield where the interstate iced over, and we had to put people in a shelter. And actually, the state police weren't exactly sure how far the cars were backed up on the interstate, and I went out. We were putting information on the Facebook page for the county saying to people what the situation was. I actually had a lady who lives in Dixon whose daughter was traveling south on the interstate tell me exactly where she was stopped at on the interstate, and I could actually go and relay that back to the state police and say, I know for sure the backup goes all the way to this mile marker. And they said, well, how do you know that? And I said, well, I explained to them how it came through. But that's kind of, I think, shows the power of social media. And we were pretty good that night, I think. I actually wasn't doing it. I think the 911 folks were getting information out about the shelters. So I think it's changed the game. I really do. I don't know on the preparedness side that it's making that much of a difference, but I know when we actually have to deal with situations, mm-hmm. it's one more way to get information out. So it helps us.
The scenario that caught my eye that said the game has changed and it's worth the value when the Coliseum Ballroom caught on fire. You had several different fire departments that were called in, and each one of them posted on Facebook, mm-hmm. this is what's going on, this, you know, and that's got to help.
It's definitely, like we said, it's a game changer because information is almost instantaneous on there. A good example was that the ice storm. I mean, instantaneously, information got out to people. And I had people in Springfield actually talk to me a week later going, you know, we were going towards St. Louis, but we actually pulled up the Facebook account mm-hmm. and found out that the interstate was basically not shut down per se, but stopped, and said we decided probably wasn't worth our time to travel.
And the same thing goes, we're out here traveling north, south, east, west, where we're traveling in our car, and we come upon a wreck today. Immediately, we reach in our pocket and pull out that little thing called mm-hmm. a cell phone, get 911, and mm-hmm. get someone there. If there's people severely injured, you may save a life where a short time ago that wouldn't happen. You'd mm-hmm. have to wait for somebody to come along.
Yep.
And,
or go
and
to a
get
farmhouse.
That done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let me change the subject just a little bit here. In regards to emergency preparedness, I know Hillsborough just had their tornado siren test not too long ago. Montgomery County, are all the cities prepared in case, let's say, a tornado hits, that all the sirens are working and the notification factors are there? Are we prepared?
I think we're actually in pretty good shape as far as sirens go. I know that the folks with the extension service were getting a lot of USDA grant money for sirens. That's the first time I remember that in probably 20 years that money's been available for sirens. And some of the communities actually took advantage of that and put in new weather sirens. So there was I'm not exactly sure what the match was on the grant, but a lot of the local communities actually went out and got that information. Some are still doing that today through mm-hmm. the Extension Service and working with USDA to actually get those. So more communities have sirens, but we say it 100 times and we, you know, say it again today. That is considered to be a device to alert you if you're outside of your home. It is not designed to penetrate the wall. And, you know, most people, a lot of people, it seems to me anymore, sleep with fans on or the TVs on or whatever. You really need to go out and spend $19 or whatever and buy yourself a weather alert radio to keep in your house. People don't realize it, but there actually is a tower down by Coffeen Lake now where the National Weather Service can put these alerts out. So Montgomery County actually has a centralized location now where that information gets out. So it isn't like you miss that. If St. Louis puts it out or Springfield puts it out, we have a location now a lot closer to the county where this information will get out to you.
And that game has changed quite a bit because you watch, let's say, Channel 4 or something like that out of St. Louis, and it's like, oh, well, it's going this way. It's not going to hit us. And then you watch, we have that the service of we have like two different weather forecasts, and what they say and what we get may be two different things.
If I'm home and we're doing weather work, if I've got spotters out, we use a lot less spotters than we used to. We mm-hmm. do a lot more. We always have somebody on the computer now. Used to be we never had anybody on the computer. You had people out spotting, and everybody would go off their own little merry way and pick a spot and work. But now at least one person's on the computer because you're getting almost, you know, instantaneous access to NEXRAD radar, and you can kind of keep an eye on what's going on. So a lot of times you can be telling these people what's happening, saying, hey, you know, we're 15 minutes out or whatever from getting this. So,
and talking about getting a radio, a weather radio that lets you know when these things are happening. take that a step farther. Once you get that information at your house that a tornado is in the area and has touched down here and there, then take that advice and get out and get to a shelter. Mm-hmm. Don't be trying to grab up stuff to take with you and stuff. It's time to move. Mm-hmm. Move. And you know, your life is not replaceable.
There was a story on the Weather Channel this morning about a lady in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that actually went into an interior room and got in the bathtub and actually had to grab a small child by the legs and hold on for dear life because the tornado was trying to suck this child out of her arms. And so people need to make that, like you said, they need to make, that's an excellent point, they need to make that distinction. If I get the information, I got to act on it. I can't wait to decide, should I do it or should I not do it? You know, and again, warnings are coming a lot more ahead than they used to, but people still have to make a decision. I will say this, I'm pretty pleased that, like, for example, in Nokomis, what the schools have done in the last few years. They've taken a real serious approach to disaster preparedness and severe storms, and they're really trying to do what's right. We've got people out in the school districts, working with the school districts, taking a look at where the safest place are to put the kids, and that's a big deal. I'm glad to see that going on.
And having a disaster plan, be it fire, tornado, or whatever, is just like buying insurance. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is, insurance that you hope you never have to use.
And what should be in a disaster plan?
Most people need to understand, if you're going to write one for home, if you got a fire, where's your rally point when you get out of the home? Where are you going to go? We call it a PAR in a fire service, but it's an accountability check. Make sure everybody's out. They need to identify a place in their home where they can shelter. If the tornado's coming and you get a 5-minute warning ahead of time, that's not the time to decide where you're going to shelter people. The other thing is people need to have a preparedness kit. And we always say this, and people never do it, but, you know, even keeping an extra supply of medications around the home so that you don't run out of your medication on the day the tornado hits and then you have to go to the Red Cross or whatever and try to get that replaced. So just having a few simple things around. And even for people with pets, if you got pets, you ought to have pet carriers for the pets. So if mm-hmm. you got to relocate the pets, you don't have to worry about somebody bringing in a pet carrier. If you got, you know, three dogs, you ought to have three carriers so that you can take them and have them moved. You know, there's a plan in place for the county. We just wrote that last year to actually take provisions to take care of people's pets. And I mean, that, I think that's the biggest, if I've heard one person say it, I've heard 1,000 people say it. I'm not leaving if the dog has to stay behind. And I understand mm-hmm. where they're coming from, but you have to make preparations for that side of it too. So,
yeah. It's good to see that at least here in Montgomery County, we are prepared for the upcoming storm season, because like Mother Nature, you just never know what she's going to bring you.
You know, and the other thing is that I think people are going to hear is that the Weather Service is trying some new warnings. They're changing the verbiage, and it's going to be a lot more dramatic, I would say, talking about things like catastrophic, non-survivable. I'm not sure. In my opinion, the jury's still out on that. I don't know that that's going to influence people any more than the warnings are going out now, but I know that this area has been targeted as one of those places where they're going to market that, if that's the best term for it, and try it and see what it does. So instead of saying take cover, you're going to be hearing things like this is a catastrophic event, or this may be non-survivable if you don't protect yourself, you know, underground. Well, you know, if nothing else, people are going to hear that, and I'm not sure they're going to take more aggressive action to protect themselves.
I could see non-survival be a bad one.
I think probably there's going to be some ramifications of this when this starts getting put out. So like I said, the jury's still out on that, but I know they are changing that, and I know that this is one of the areas that we're going to market that. So,
Joe, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. Thank you so much for stopping by, and that's going to do it for today's Wednesday talk show. Uncle Ralph, next week, Richard Small will be in.
For the Roubaix race.
Roubaix and I think the Kelly Miller Circus yep. as well. So yep. Earl Sarles is coming up next on the flip side with the market report. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening.